Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. Stand by now for the World View. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, we will look forward to the week to come. We will look back upon the week that was, and we shall be entertained and edified together. I spent the entire week, this past week, driving across the great state of Missouri. And from one end to the other, from Kansas City right to the Mississippi River. And by the way, St. Louis, the area there around the Arch, I mean, what a dump. Man, I wanted to go hang out at the Arch, but I had left my gun at home, and I felt unsafe. But I did manage to dip my fingers into the Mississippi River, and man, what a nasty-looking river it was right there. But anyway, the point I wanted to make, for all of you tree huggers who are concerned about the state of trees here in America, I mean, I never saw so many different varieties of trees. And I'm not talking about just pine trees like you see in East Texas or Louisiana or the Northwest. I'm talking about every variety of deciduous hardwood, oaks, maples, elms, poplar, spruce, apple, cherry. For as far as the eye can see, I went from Kansas City down south through Springfield up to Poplar Bluff and over to St. Louis. And at the tops of some of the hills, it was simply breathtaking. The miles and miles and miles of trees that have been somehow spared by our insatiable capitalist economy. So if you're out there and you're fretting about the trees, drive through Missouri. I think only the Northeast. Upstate New York certainly rivals Missouri. And I've never been to Maine, but I've heard Maine and Vermont, New Hampshire are similar. But let me just say to God, nice work. Very nice. Made for quite a pleasant drive. All right. But as I was, I had to go from city to city, and I was watching the news, Fox News, as a matter of fact, in some town. I don't even remember where I was. Flicked on the TV, and the first thing I saw was an entire news segment of 8 to 10 minutes on how to survive a home invasion. And that was a little disconcerting. Here I am out on the road. My extremely attractive audio engineer and my three young daughters are here at home by themselves. And the first thing I see on TV is a Fox News correspondent lecturing me on how to prevent and survive a home invasion. I think the basic rules are don't do anything civilized, you know, like leave your windows and doors unlocked, and get a dog. And you all know my theory about dogs, right? The reason dogs became domesticated is because at some point in our past, mankind devolved to the point where everyone was constantly robbing, stealing, and killing one another. And so you had to get a dog just to survive. Well, welcome to suburban America circa 2010. Besides, lock your house up like a vault and get a dog.
If you have a bone, you don't go for it.
That's right. They didn't point out that the criminal could just throw a ham hock over the fence and knock out your dog's capabilities. All right, but we have more news that I can possibly get to this week. So let me start with a story from the Reuters Wire. Scientists, in their brilliance, have observed that it could have been a wind that parted the Red Sea for Moses and the Israelites as they fled the Egyptians in the well-known story from the book of Exodus in the Holy Bible. They say it was a wind. In fact, Reuters says Moses might not have parted the Red Sea, but a strong east wind that blew through the night could have pushed the waters back. Computer simulations show wind could push water back And what else do we have? According to one scientist, he says, quote, people have always been fascinated by this Exodus story, wondering if it comes from historical facts. What this scientific study shows is that the description of the waters parting indeed has a basis in physical laws. What got me about this article was the reporters exposing their genuine ignorance and saying Moses might not have parted the Red Sea. Let's go, if you have your Bible with you, let's go to Exodus in the 14th chapter, starting at about the 21st verse. Let me just get there. And we will read from the New King James Version, Exodus 14:21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. That's what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say Moses parted the Red Sea. The Bible says the Lord parted the Red Sea, and he did it with a strong east wind. And here we have some scientists here who have pointed out the obvious. I mean, what's been obvious to we amateur theologians for our entire adult lives? It was not Moses that parted the Red Sea, you geniuses. But see, what they have a problem with is attributing it to the Lord. That's what they have a problem with. So they want to say it was the wind, but the Lord says he used a wind. Geniuses. Anyway. And now they don't go on to explain how it was that the Red Sea, then collapsed upon the Egyptian army. And they don't quite cover all that, but the Lord does cover it in Exodus, the 14th chapter, which I encourage you to read at your convenience. All right. So there, that's that. Now let's move on into the politics file. Some really interesting, wacky, disturbing, and problematic stories coming to us this week. Here we have one from ABC News. In a new BBC documentary, Prince Charles says that he speaks with the trees and the plants in his garden. He says, quote, I happily talk to the plants and trees and listen to them. I think it's absolutely critical, unquote. And now, I don't want to offend anyone. I don't have any problem with talking to plants, okay? I know a lot of people who have green thumbs. They talk to their plants, and it helps the plants to grow. Allegedly. That's what I've heard. I myself don't have a green thumb. But I don't have a problem with the talking part, Chuck. It's the listening part that kind of bothers me in this particular story. He says the listening is absolutely critical. And the prince says that speaking to the plants keeps him relatively sane, which I think that's a fairly accurate description of the mindset of one Prince Charles the Prince of Wales. he's relatively sane, you know, relative to someone who's completely berserk. He's relative. All right, more from politics. What do we have here? From ABC News, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has warned the Obama administration that if Iran's nuclear facilities are attacked, the U.S. will, quote, face a war that would know no boundaries, unquote. That's the warning from that short little dirty-looking guy in the fairly well-cut suit. Did you see the suit he was wearing over at the U.N. this week? Did you see that? He's apparently hired a tailor. Now he just needs to work on a barber. And by the way, I watched his speech live, at least part of it. And is it just me? Or has Mahmoud invested in a really bad hairpiece? I mean, that rug, I don't know. If it's not a rug, then he really needs to look into some conditioner or something.
It's a camel.
I mean, camel, you think? It could be. I mean, it was just really bad, okay? It was just really bad. What else did Mahmoud have to say? In a wide-ranging question and answer session, Ahmadinejad said he was prepared to meet with the Obama administration, but he says the whole outlook, he says America's whole outlook, quote, has to shift, unquote. And I think what he means here is that Barry Ho would have to bow before the meeting. And from what I can tell, Barry wouldn't have a problem with that. I think he'd be okay with that. So Mahmoud, I mean, invite Barry over. He'll bow. You guys can have tea. And then, you know, you can nuke Tel Aviv. What's that? Maybe they could have plenty of plants in the room. Invite Prince Charles. And you could all have a wonderful conversation. All right, now, I want to say something out there to my 9/11 truther friends. Now, I have some 9/11 truther friends who are in my immediate vicinity. And they are my friends, okay? But they're truthers. And I could take the easy pot shot at my 9/11 truther friends and give them a hard time because they agree with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who basically accused George Bush and Dick Cheney of blowing up the World Trade Center and sending a missile into the Pentagon and whatever other theory of the week there is on 9/11 truth websites out there. But I am not going to take any pot shots at my 9/11 truther friends just because Mahmoud Ahmadinejad agrees with them, because there have been more than one occasion in the past that Mahmoud has said things that I agree with. And just because a raving lunatic, maniac, murderous, bloodthirsty dictator tyrant says something that you agree with doesn't mean that you agree with him. So let's not beat up on the 9/11 truthers about that. What, examples? Well, Ahmadinejad has said in speeches that adultery is criminal, and I agree with that. He's also said that homosexuality is criminal, and I agree with that. He's also said that pornography should be outlawed and punishable as a crime. And I agree with that. So there are a myriad of reasons why I disagree with my 9/11 truther friends. But the fact that Mahmoud opened his big yap this week about it is certainly not one of them. And I will not hold that against any of my 9/11 truther friends. Okay, now let's move on. Here's some interesting news from the Foreign War File, from the Associated Press, from Tehran, Iran. A complex computer worm has affected the personal computers of staff working at Iran's first nuclear power station just weeks before the facility is to go online. The project manager at Bushehr Nuclear Power Plant, Mahmoud Jafari, he says that this computer worm, quote, has not caused any damage to major systems of the Bushehr nuclear power plant, unquote. That's what this Mahmoud says. He says no damage. Anyway, I just thought this. You remember back, I don't know, a month ago, when we were warned that we needed to bomb, someone needed to bomb Bushehr before it was loaded and fueled with nuclear rods. And the bombing did not occur, and I was quite perplexed. And I remember saying at that time that I had hoped that the Jews knew something. You know, when they failed to bomb Bushehr, I hope they knew something that we didn't. Well, and apparently they did know something. Because, I mean, why bomb the place if you can have a half a dozen 14-year-old kids in their mom's basement create a computer worm to go over there? And I think it's just a beautiful thing. And I hope this is the future of warfare. I hope there's no more need to indiscriminately bomb and blow things up. Hopefully we can shut down the enemies of freedom and righteousness and goodness and well-being with computer viruses. I think that would be wonderful. And my hat's off to Shmuley and his friends over there in their mom's basement. Job well done, boys. All right, now, let's move deeper into the politics file, and it gets even weirder. North Korea, according to, Sky.com, which I believe is out of Great Britain, North Korea is expected to name new leadership at a meeting coming up on September 28th. Analysts believe current leader Kim Jong-il's youngest son, Kim Jong-un, is likely to be given some sort of official title at this upcoming Workers' Party conference. That's if they can find hors d'oeuvres or main courses or anything to eat. They're going to have a big meeting. Apparently, according to Sky News, party meetings have been held all around the country to elect delegates to the conference. That's a loosely applied form of the verb elect. Anyway, Communist Party meetings are being held all over Korea. And, you know, the story makes me wonder, what's the deal with Kim Jong-il's oldest son? Why is Kim Jong-il handing power over to his youngest son? I mean, if Kim Jong-il thinks that you're unfit to lead, I mean, either you're completely incompetent and a maniac, or perhaps his eldest son is good, maybe. But for whatever reason, the eldest son has been skipped over. Can't remember the details. I don't know. He either has a major problem with controlling himself, or perhaps he would institute some sort of liberty-based reforms in North Korea, and that scares the North Korean leader. Doesn't want any of that. So we'll see what happens over there, I suppose. Now, quickly, let's jump out of the politics file, and we're going to go into the justice file. A man, this is according to NBC in New York, a man yearning to meet Madonna has been accused of scrawling messages of adoration on the sidewalk outside her apartment building and possessing a 7.5-inch ice pick. An ice pick, I said. Robert Leinhart is charged with graffiti and criminal possession of an ice pick. A charge I've never heard of. Criminal possession of an ice pick. The ice pick was recovered from his car. Now, NBC in New York says that the grizzled 59-year-old was apparently supposed to appear in court last Wednesday, but we still don't know what's going to happen to the fellow with the ice pick. She's got the jack. 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 Jack, 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 jack. She's got the jack. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you with us this week. Thank you, Angus. Go have a cigarette. Take it easy, buddy. All right. We will continue in the politics file this week. We have a report here from the Washington Post, Consumer Waste. A new book has been released detailing Barry Ho, and the administration of Barack Hussein Obama, and their struggles with the war in Afghanistan. And according to the Washington Post article, Barry Ho is frustrated with his military commanders because they were constantly offering him only options that required significantly more troops in the Afghan theater. Now, Obama finally crafted his own strategy, dictating a classified 6-page term sheet that sought to limit U.S. involvement. So it was like a college term paper for Barry. He did a term paper on Afghanistan and submitted it to his generals, who I suppose are in the place of his professors. Just weird. It's just strange and fairly disturbing. Now, according to Bob Woodward, not necessarily an unimpeachable source, but he did have access to the entire Barry Ho war team. According to Woodward, the president avoided talk of victory as he described his objectives. During an interview with Woodward back in July, Barry Ho said, quote, "We can absorb a terrorist attack. We'll do everything we can to prevent it. But even a 9-1-1, even the biggest attack ever, we absorbed it and we are stronger," unquote. That's what Barry Ho said, and I would dispute the fact that we are stronger, Barry, since 9/11. In fact, it's as if we've lost our minds. Well, and I use the collective we. I don't mean me. I mean you, Barry. And people like you, and frankly, people like Bob Woodward. Certainly not doing us any good, seeing as you seem to have forgotten how to fight a war, and certainly have forgotten how to win one. Anything else interesting from this book? National Security Advisor James L. Jones apparently privately referred to Obama's political aides as the Politburo. That's just funny. And I don't think Jim works there anymore, oddly enough. All right, now let's continue in the politics file. From the Hill, which is some sort of college newspaper put out there in the Washington, D.C. area, Vice President Joe Biden said last Thursday that the conservative Tea Party movement might be, quote, the best thing to happen, unquote, to Democrats in the midterm elections approaching rapidly this November. Second Tuesday in November. First Tuesday in November. Well, I don't know. I've got a mail-in ballot, so I kind of lose track of that. Biden says that the Tea Party might inspire a lethargic Democratic base to turn out to vote in November. He says, quote, maybe the Tea Party will shake some of our constituency out of their lethargy, he says. Now, I looked up lethargy in the dictionary, and the dictionary definition for lethargy is the state of being drowsy and dull, listless and unenergetic, indifferent, lazy, apathetic, or in a malaise. A malaise, yes, I know, it's strikingly close. We're getting strikingly close to the Carter years. And, of course, I think I was comparing Barry Ho to Jimmy Carter long before anyone else, at least long before anyone else in my own mind. Anyway, the vice president, always a reliable source of wisdom, offered a guarantee that the Democrats will maintain control of the House of Representatives. He said the Democrats have, quote, a heck of a record, a heck of a record, a positive record to run on. That's Joe Biden. It's odd that none of the Democrats seem to be running on that record, and I don't think too many of them are inviting Joe to their fundraisers these days. But anyway, we'll all be there in November. We certainly will. All right. Now, into the personhood file, we have personhood news this week. From Fox News, this is an amazing story. A Canadian woman is the first patient to undergo an operation in which doctors cut her body in half to remove a tumor, and she has survived. Janice Olson, 31 years old, was pregnant with her second child, and she was complaining of back pain. Well, it turns out it wasn't the pregnancy. She was soon diagnosed with bone cancer that was untreatable by chemotherapy or radiation. This mother from Manitoba was told by experts in Toronto that they would have to cut her body in half by removing her leg, her lower spine, and half of her pelvis to remove a tumor the size of a calzone. Yeah. Well, the operation went forward. Olson is now cancer-free, and apparently killing the baby was not necessary.
Really?
Killing, surprisingly enough, they didn't have to stop and kill the baby. Yeah, isn't that amazing? Now, how does that fit into the personhood? Well, bear with me for just a moment. Now, killing the baby was definitely an option in that case. Because killing the baby is always an option. Because we adults are bigger and stronger and more powerful than babies who are in the womb, so killing them is always an option. But notice that it was not necessary. Now, yeah, we did have to cut the woman in half, but in sparing the baby's life, we have perhaps advanced medicine by an order of magnitude. Okay? Pretty amazing. All right. More from the personhood file. This is from National Review. Governor Chris Christie signed the termination of $7.5 million in public money for Planned Parenthood clinics in the state of New Jersey. But Democrats in the Senate fought back. They passed a bill, reinstated the funding, and they had a veto-proof majority. That's right. But when the veto actually came, when Governor Christie followed through and actually vetoed the bill, the Republicans who had voted to fund Planned Parenthood got a little bit nervous, stuck their wet fingers in the air, saw which way the winds was a-blowing, and the Republicans backed off, and the override of Christie's veto failed. Now, Planned Parenthood facilities in the state are shuttering their doors. Talk about a step in the right direction. Chris Christie, pretty impressive guy. Let's see. The Cherry Hill Courier-Post newspaper says a Planned Parenthood facility located in southern New Jersey, will close down. And apparently, Planned Parenthood New Jersey stands to lose as much as $160,000 in taxpayer money because of Chris Christie. And with the closing of this southern New Jersey Planned Parenthood Center, customers seeking abortions will now have to go to the abortion mills in Camden, Belmar, or Edgewater Park. And those are just the local ones. So, I mean, Chris Christie, that's a step in the right direction, but we've got a lot of work to do. How do we shut down abortion clinics? Because nobody likes abortion. Everybody's made uncomfortable by abortion. And except, of course, there's always the exception, the, as Michael Savage calls them, the clipped-haired, clenched-jawed crowd who are proud of their abortions and want you to have an abortion and want your daughter to have an abortion. There are those, but the average person, we're all uncomfortable with abortion. We don't even like to talk about it because it's such a gruesome issue. So how do we shut them down? Is it maybe the Republicans, right? Perhaps. Well, let's read here from WorldNet Daily. You've all heard about it. The new agenda inspired by the 1994 contract with America, the pledge to America. I pulled this article down earlier in the week, just before the pledge to America was unveiled, as the buzz was building in the media about the pledge for America. And this article, in this article, Concerned Women for America's president, Wendy Wright, told WorldNet Daily, now remember, this is before the pledge was unveiled. She said, I'm confident that the Republican leadership is aware that life and marriage and family issues must be addressed in their document. She says, preserving traditional marriage is a 70% issue with the American people. And she also says, the majority of Americans do not want tax dollars going to abortion. Now, Wendy, first of all, on those two issues, who cares what the majority wants? Who cares? I mean, at one point in American history, the majority wanted to own slaves, at least in the majority of the southern states. So is that really what we should go by, Wendy? What the majority wants? Anyway, I mean, she should be stating why these things are wrong and dangerous, corrosive, immoral, and against what the founders of our nation believed in. That's what she should be stating. And somewhere along the line, she could be mentioning the 5,000 years of history regulated by the Holy Scriptures, the Bible, and God himself. Anyway, but I found it interesting that Wendy was so certain that Republicans were going to address the social issues, as they're called. And, well, Wendy, you're just pretty gullible, okay? You're gullible, or perhaps like Phyllis Schlafly, who we mentioned a week ago, you're just old, worn out, used up, and you just need to get out. You can go to a dog track or a retirement home or something like that. I mean, I believe the Republicans in their pledge to America did agree to restore the bogus, phony ban on federal funds to kill babies. I forget what it's called because it's just a bunch of hokum. But I believe they said, look, we'll reinstall this phony rule that we won't fund abortion. Meanwhile, $300 million a year goes to Planned Parenthood. What do you think they do with that money? Anyway, I'm sure Wendy thinks that the restoration of the alleged ban on federal funding of abortion is very important and will be a political victory in her eyes. And that's why I say, Wendy, please just get out. Just get out, Wendy. All right. Now we'll go to the culture file. This is from NBC in Philadelphia. The Sugar House Casino in Fishtown, there in Philadelphia, has opened its doors. It's the first casino in Philadelphia. So here we have it. We have Wendy Wright, who's a gullible moron, along with all of the establishment Republicans up there in Washington. And now we've got the cradle of America, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, has been turned over to a casino. I mean, have the Visigoths surrounded the city yet? Have the Visigoths surrounded us yet? All right. And now, even worse, from the Reuters Wire, there's apparently a new TV show. There's a new TV show, and it's on, I don't know what channel. It's going to be on the E! Network. And let's just read the article for crying out loud. It's from Reuters. Cable network E! Has announced a new show called Bridalplasty. bridalplasty, I said, in which 12 engaged women live in a mansion together and compete in challenges to win plastic surgery procedures from each other's bride's wish list. So this is America? This is entertainment? Brides competing for plastic surgery on their on the eve of their wedding? Do I smell Visigoths? Doug McBurney, so glad to have you with us on this week's edition of the Weekly Worldview as we go worldwide to a worldwide audience unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. We will delve even further now into the personhood file. The organizers, this is according to WorldNet Daily, the organizers behind the Colorado Pro-Life Initiative scheduled for the November election has filed a lawsuit against the state of Colorado over lies about the measure in the official voter manual. Yes, there's a manual that's mailed out to every voter, voters like me who get the mail-in ballot, and I think to every voter who's registered. The manual, called the Blue Book here in Colorado, is prepared before each election by the Colorado Student Council. I mean, the Colorado Legislative Council. And it's intended, according to the state agency's website, to provide voters with the text, title, and a fair and impartial analysis. Well, sponsors behind Colorado's Amendment 62 say this year's Blue Book is anything but fair and impartial. Gualberto Garcia-Jones, a co-sponsor of Amendment 62, he says, first, we were disallowed from including the text of the amendment in the arguments for section. And he says that the Blue Book published several falsehoods about Amendment 62, such as that women could be denied health care for miscarriages. That is in the Blue Book, that if you vote yes on 62, you're voting against women getting health care in the case of a miscarriage, which is a bald-faced, damnable lie. I said damnable lie, not Gualberto. Anyway, Keith Mason, whose work at Personhood USA has been integral to the state's 62 campaign, told WorldNet Daily, quote, "Not only is Planned Parenthood using our tax dollars to kill children, they're using our tax dollars through this Blue Book process to get their talking points into the hands of every voter in the state of Colorado, and that's just wrong." Now, officials, unquote. Now, officials for the Amendment 62 campaign are seeking an immediate injunction because the books are already in the process of being printed and mailed. So there's going to be a hearing, apparently, on October 7th. At which a judge will rule against the pro-lifers. Now, that's just a, I guess that's just a pessimistic prediction from me. But I guess we'll see. October 7th, there will be a hearing. Amendment 62 sponsors reported. Now, there's a line in there. The folks at the Blue Book were apparently upset with the word "the beginning of the biological development." See, Amendment 62 seeks to define when life begins. Because the politicians have avoided the topic and seem to not know the answer, the Christians in Colorado have decided to teach them the answer. And so Christians in Colorado wrote Amendment 62, and it states that every human being shall be legally defined as a person in the eyes of the law from the moment of their biological beginning, from the beginning of the biological development of that human being. And the folks writing the Blue Book on the student council up there in Denver say that that term just, you know, it's such an amorphous term, the beginning of the biological development. That's not really a scientific term. Well, 62 sponsors provided letters from embryology experts and cell biologists, one of whom said that the statement proposed for the Blue Book, which leaves out and criticizes this beginning of biological development, that these statements were political, not scientific, And the scientists went on to explain the scientific fallacies of the proposed statements put into the Blue Book by the Student Council. Yet these expert statements from embryologists and cell biologists were disregarded by the geniuses at the Student Council up in Denver. And, well, there's a showdown brewing October 7th. I might just take myself up to the Capitol on that day. All right. Now, out of the personhood file, we are going to jump into politics. The Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr. Wait a minute, not Reverend. I'm sorry. Representative. Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. is in some sort of trouble. Jesse Jackson Jr. said last Tuesday that he's deeply sorry for having disappointed his supporters regarding his relationship with a female social acquaintance, as he called her. Have you ever been deeply sorry for a social acquaintance? I never have. I've never apologized for someone that I went and had a drink with or had lunch with. But he's very sorry about this female social acquaintance. Apparently there was a report out of the Chicago Sun-Times there's something there apparently with Jesse Jackson Jr. maybe out cheating on his wife. And also there's a report that he offered former governor Rod Blagojevich $6 million for a Barry Hose Senate seat. No doubt Rahm Emanuel is clearing the field, because let's face it, folks, this is just typical Democrat corruption. And it's catching up with Jackson. But Democrat corruption never catches up with a Democrat politician unless there's another Democrat politician who wants to get him out of the way. And I think that's what Rahm Emanuel is doing at this very moment. And, that should be fun to watch. The demise of Jesse. Maybe he will get a degree in theology and become a reverend. Perhaps Jesse Jackson Jr. will have to do just that. All right, but let's see. And now even deeper into the bowels and the black belly of politics, Florida Governor Charlie Crist announced last Wednesday that he will cease enforcing the state's 33-year-old ban on homosexuals adopting children because that law has been declared unconstitutional by a Miami appeals court judge. So he's going to stop enforcing it. Crist called the court ruling allowing the morally deviant and corrupt to adopt children, he called that ruling, quote, great, unquote. Now, you all know Charlie Crist. He's the one who switched from the Republican Party to the, I guess he's an independent now, and he's running against Marco Rubio down there. According to McClatchy News here in Washington, Crist once supported the ban on deviantly morally corrupt perverts adopting kids, but he has reversed himself after he left the Republican Party and began courting the morally deviant and corrupt vote, which he's been doing assiduously for the last several months. I really believe that the Florida gubernatorial election will serve as a barometer of the strength of the morally deviant versus America. Because I still believe that in America, I don't believe there's a moral majority, don't get me wrong. I think the majority are pretty much wicked, selfish, corrupt. But I think there's enough, there's like 30% of us here who haven't lost our minds and want to turn kids over to queers and perverts and deviants, and who don't want to marry each other in front of God and everybody. I guess we'll find out in this election if there's enough of us left down there in Florida, if Rubio defeats Crist. All right, but all is not lost. Get a load of this. If you want something to lift your spirits, from the New York Daily News, the article opens up with this line. The Texas Republican Party gives a whole new meaning to the word conservative. And here's the story. The GOP in Texas has voted on a platform that would ban deviant sex It would also give jail sentences to anyone who issues marriage licenses to a homosexual. And according to the official platform, here's how it reads. We oppose, now this is the Republican Party of the great state of Texas. Quote, we oppose the legalization of sodomy. We demand that Congress exercise its authority granted by the Constitution to withhold jurisdiction from the federal courts from cases involving sodomy. Wow. I've always said, and my extremely attractive audio engineer, she has no interest in moving to the great state of Texas. But we may all have to flee there someday, so I just want you to be prepared, okay? I know that you like San Diego, but it may be lost. We may have to flee to Texas. Anyway, get a load of this now. According to the New York Daily News, Texas initially passed a law barring sodomy in 1860. So sodomy's been illegal in Texas since 1860, yet the author who wrote this article says Texas Republicans give a whole new meaning to the word conservative. You know, I think it's modern progressives in the media who give a whole new meaning to the word conservative. I think that your average rank and file Republican in Texas is fine with the good old fashioned definition, which says we prefer steers over queers here in Texas. All right, now let's see more from the war file from CNN. The Obama administration has invoked the state secret privilege in seeking to dismiss a lawsuit filed on behalf of the father of the Yemeni American cleric and militant Anwar al-Awlaki. Yeah. There's a lawsuit that sought to prevent the U.S. government from killing Awlaki. Awlaki apparently has been targeted for assassination by the Obama administration. So not only does Ahmadinejad sometimes say things I agree with, so does Barack Obama. Barack Obama says he wants to assassinate Anwar al-Awlaki, and I'm all for that, Barry. On that, we can agree. If we were to have a beer summit on that topic, well, all would be happy. Can you believe this? The American Civil Liberties Union and the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit back in August on behalf of the father of this known terrorist. Al-Awlaki has been linked to Al-Qaeda in Yemen, where he's believed to be hiding. And there has been proven conversations between Al-Awlaki and the Christmas Day bomber over Detroit and the Fort Bragg killer. Can you believe the ACLU would file a lawsuit on behalf to protect a terrorist? Of course you believe that. It's not shocking. I mean, if the Obama administration is going to be targeting anyone for assassination, couldn't we start with the executive committee of the American Civil Liberties Union? I mean, surely we have drones that fly over Sausalito, Boston. All right, well, that was just a joke. I certainly wouldn't advocate any private citizen targeting the American Civil Liberties Union Executive Council for assassination. But, you know, if the military did it under the auspices of the United States government, I wouldn't protest is all I'm saying. All right, now, let's go into the justice file. Well, wait, before we go into the justice file, let me do this one. It's from the politics file. From Washington, Congress has introduced and passed legislation that eliminates the term mental retardation from all federal laws. Yes, Congress has changed the phrase mentally retarded to, here's the new phrase, an individual with an intellectual disability. Yeah, that, yes. Now, the new term, I believe, is much more appropriate of a term when you're describing the legislative branch here in the United States. I mean, if you had a choice between being locked in the same room with a Down syndrome child or, say, Zoe Lofgren, Nancy Pelosi, or Barney Frank, I mean, who would you choose to be locked in a room with? I'll take the Down syndrome child every day of the week. Now, the former Down syndrome, children, mentally retarded people. They are retarded, okay? And folks, the word retarded is only considered derogatory by those who never developed beyond an adolescent understanding of the English language. Now, the latter, the politicians, the congressmen who passed this bill, well, they clearly have an intellectual disability. Worldview. We're rounding third and headed for home. My extremely attractive audio engineer just handed me this week's issue of Parade magazine. Oh my goodness, it's got Drew Carey on the cover. That's terrible. Inside, there are pictures of aging rock stars. Paul Stanley from Kiss. My goodness. What? There is a plastic surgeon somewhere in New York who should be drummed out of practice. Aerosmith's Joe. Oh my goodness, Joe Perry. Wow. Eddie Van Halen. Oh, man. Eddie, say it ain't so. Well, anyway, if you want to scare your kids off a life of drug abuse and and a wild lifestyle, just cut those pictures out of this week's parade and show it to your kid when he's about 11.
Better with the makeup, right?
Yeah, Paul Stanley, he should put the makeup back on. I agree. All right. Now, seriously, folks, let's jump into the justice file from Jarrett, Virginia on CNN. Teresa Lewis, a woman who was called the mastermind in the murder-for-hire deaths of her husband and stepson, was executed last Thursday night, the first woman executed there in a long, long time. The two trigger men in the case, the men she hired to actually shoot her husband and stepson, they got life without parole. She pled guilty back in 2002 of killing her husband and stepson. Her lawyer had this to say after the execution, quote, "Tonight, the machinery of death in Virginia extinguished the beautiful, childlike, and loving human spirit of Teresa Lewis, who hired two guys to shoot and kill her husband and her stepson." All right, I made up the last part, but he did call her a beautiful, childlike, loving human spirit. He says, "It's our hope that Teresa's death will cause a reexamination of the badly broken system of justice that could allow something as wrong and unjust as this to happen." How could you become a lawyer and live with yourself? How can you look yourselves in the mirror? It's unbelievable. Anyway, her lawyer said that her IQ was borderline mentally retarded. Or I guess we should say intellectually disabled at this point. But she was smart enough to hire the hitmen. And apparently she's being interviewed right now by Jesus Christ regarding the events surrounding that particular case. We'll see how well she acquits herself in that. Let's go deeper into the justice file from New Haven, Connecticut. Two Connecticut men charged with killing a woman and her two daughters in a 2007 home invasion exchanged text messages hours before in which one said he was putting his own child to bed. John Farnham testified at the trial of Stephen Hayes that Hayes and Joshua Komajarvarsky texted each other on the evening of July 22nd, hours before they broke into a house, assaulted, abused, tied up, and burned to death two girls and a woman. Anyway, I saw this on CNN, and the reporters were just... They said, "Can you believe someone could send a text about their own children or their own child and then go kill someone?" But then they showed the text of the text. And one of the murderers said in a text, quote, "Putting kid to bed, hold your horses," unquote. Putting kid to bed? Anyway, just sounds like a black-hearted, evil bastard to me, putting kid to bed. Hayes is accused of sexually assaulting and strangling Hawk Petit, Komajewski is charged with sexually assaulting 11-year-old Michaela. The two allegedly tied Michaela and her 17-year-old sister Haley to their beds, poured gasoline on and around them, and set the house on fire, killing the girls and their mother. Makes me want to put together a lynch mob and go to New Haven, Connecticut. But I will refrain. Can I do any more of this from the... quickly, because I just can't take it. From the Domestic Tranquility File, last night, 8 people were shot, 1 fatally, another 3 stabbed at a birthday party. 1 man died at the scene. No arrests have been made, and the incident does not appear to be gang-related, according to police. From Domestic Tranquility, Seattle, from the Associated Press, a woman shot and killed 3 people and herself at a Seattle home last Thursday, injuring another woman who fled in the front yard and screamed to officers, "My mom has gone crazy." That's the state of Domestic Tranquility in Seattle. From Manchester, Tennessee, a man is accused of killing his girlfriend and her 2 young children, stuffing their corpses into plastic garbage bags and hiding them in a closet for several days. Manchester, Tennessee police chief identified the victims as 26-year-old Stephanie Hirschman and her sons, 3-year-old Jathan and 1-year-old Jalen. 30-year-old Matthew Perkins is accused of the crime. One fellow who leased a house to Perkins for 2 years said they'd been good tenants and he seemed like a pleasant person. One more from the Domestic Tranquility File. Indianapolis, Indiana. 7-year-old Indianapolis girl told investigators she and her siblings usually slept when barricaded in an apartment closet by their mother. But last weekend, she called out for the woman to open the door after realizing her brother and sister had died in the closet. Ebian Farah, 28-year-old mother, is charged with 8 counts of neglect and confinement. Autopsies have been ordered for Farah's 4-year-old daughter, Zuhur Farah Hassan, and 3-year-old son, Zakaria Farah Hassan. They're immigrants from Somalia. Farah has told police she was not in her right mind when she placed the children in a 6-foot by 1.5-foot closet. Her 7-year-old son told investigators her mother often put the children in the closet as punishment or when she needed to cook. All right. Let's move out of the Domestic Tranquility File. We're going to go into the culture file from the religion section from Washington, CNN. A watchdog group concerned with keeping apart religion and government called for the cancellation of an evangelical concert scheduled for Fort Bragg yesterday. Americans United for Separation of Church and State said that the Rock the Fort event, put on by Billy Graham, violates the Constitution and is targeting people for conversion. And if there's one thing the people at Americans United for Separation of Church and State cannot stand, is any opportunity for anyone to be targeted for conversion. You see how they say that? Targeted? It's as if Billy Graham wants to go in there and shoot people. He's targeting them for conversion. The Right Reverend Barry Lynn, who's the executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, said, quote, "This event is totally unacceptable and must be canceled," unquote. Well, Billy Graham and his son Franklin, in a fact sheet published on the group's website about the Rock the Fort event, had this to say. They said the event will be, quote, "a clear presentation of the Christian gospel," which immediately drove Barry Lynn into a frothing rage. How dare you present the Christian gospel, especially a clear presentation of the Christian gospel? So Barry Lynn was frothing at the mouth. Another line from the fact sheet. "Attendees will have an opportunity to respond to the gospel evangelistic message." And Barry Lynn, a vein probably broke in his forehead, because atheists hate that. The opportunity for anyone to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, by the way, the Muslims hate that too. People wonder why it is the liberals seem to give the Muslims a pass. Why is that? Why would the liberals align themselves with the Muslims? It's because they both hate the living God. That's why. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. You may have heard said. So Barry Lynn would prefer the Muslims who beat their wives and cut off Jews and Christians' heads. He would prefer them to the likes of Billy and Franklin Graham because they both hate the same God and they both hate God's people. They are both in rebellion against their Creator, both the Muslims and the liberals. Let's see here. Other Rock the Fort concerts apparently have already been held at Fort Jackson, Kentucky, and Fort Leonardwood in Missouri. Can you imagine this crossing Barry Lynn's desk? What? They've already done this? At Fort Jackson and Fort Leonardwood? How did we not know about this? Heads are gonna roll! Barry Lynn calls himself a reverend. Talk about someone going straight to hell with jet rockets. That's Barry Lynn. All right, one more from the religion file. This is from the Telegraph in London. 6 people have been arrested on suspicion of inciting racial hatred after videos emerged on the internet showing copies of the Quran being burned. Yeah. In a video that at last report was still accessible on YouTube, 6 young men in hooded tops or having scarves over their faces can be seen pouring gasoline on a book and setting it on fire. Before burning each other. Or is that another book? I can't tell here if they burned each other or if they burned more than one book. The video appeared to have been filmed behind a bar. And so, there's good a chance they burned 2 or 3 Korans and then one of them was lit on fire. Anyway, this brings to mind, I'm driving down Colorado Boulevard the other day here in Denver. And I'm coming up on the Denver Islamic Center. Colorado Islamic Center is a large mosque just off Colorado Boulevard. And there is a biker, overweight, 50-something, tattooed, just scruffy-looking tough guy with an equally unattractive woman sitting behind him on his Harley-Davidson motorcycle. And as we both passed the mosque, he happened to be right next to me and kind of moving in front of me, and he gave the finger to the mosque as we drove by. He gave the mosque the finger. And it was at that point that was just one more event that confirmed to me that if we leave the battle against Islam up to the heathens, the Muslims will win. I mean, if you think that it's those who are in rebellion against God, you know, the tattooed biker types, the loser types, the atheist types, the homosexuals, the freaks, the weirdos, the creeps, you know, people who are not Christians. If we leave it up to them, the Muslims are going to win. Because the people who are going to end up defending America are tattooed, fat, overweight scumbags on motorcycles, whereas the Islamists are dedicated fighters. So that's why we need the Christians in this battle. And that's why I do not support giving the finger to the mosque as you pass. All right. Well, oddly enough, that's an interesting segue into this story from the Telegraph over in London. Hayley O'Neill is a 23-year-old woman there in Great Britain, the formerly Great Britain. She has 20 body piercings and numerous tattoos. Well, she went to a job center. It's like a job fair where you have recruiters sitting behind the desks and you go from desk to desk and you give them your resume and you tell them your sob story and they try to line up interviews for you. Well, she went to the job center and was not able, apparently, to apply for any jobs. And eventually, according to the Telegraph, she left the job center in tears without any interviews after one of the recruiters said to her, "Who would hire you looking like that?" Now, Miss O'Neill, sadly enough, got her first tattoo from her mother as an 18th birthday present. Do I smell Visigoths? Man. I mean, her mother gave her a tattoo. I mean, talk about somebody who's being disabled. This is a disabled girl, this 23-year-old. Anyway, so one of the recruiters told her, he said, "On first impression, do you think anybody would hire you?" He said, look at it this way. If you were to stand behind a wall or perhaps put a paper bag over your face, do you think you'd have a better chance of getting hired?
So this
poor girl, she has no idea how much of a freak she is. It's kind of sad, actually. I mean, it's on the one hand, it's really funny. But on the other hand, I mean, this poor ignorant child has no idea that her mother has raised her to be a freak. And she's a freak. And she doesn't even know she looks like a freak. And when someone tells her she's a freak, she breaks out in tears. And anyway, she says, quote, he talked to me as though I was just going through a phase in my life. But this is my lifestyle choice, and this is who I am. So our advice to Haley O'Neill is, well, get used to being unemployed if this is your lifestyle choice. All right, more from the Culture File. Jamesburg, New Jersey, from the Associated Press. Officials suspended a fifth grader in New Jersey who found a lighter on his way to school. Jamesburg school superintendent told the news of East Brunswick that the lighter had the potential to compromise student safety. But the 11-year-old boy's father questioned why school officials considered the lighter a weapon. Well, the superintendent says a weapon is anything that has the potential to cause harm. What about a public school student? Wait a minute, what about a public school? Wouldn't that be considered a weapon? I mean, talk about having the potential to cause harm. The public schools and the students therein have a proven record of monstrous harm. But anyway, the kid was suspended, and perhaps the father will realize that he needs to get his kid out of the public school. If you're sending your kids to public school, you are either a person with a, what was it, an intellectual disability, is it? You're just a moron, but nobody's that stupid. If you are sending your children to the public school or if you're considering doing so, be advised it is a sin against God and your children. Get them out. All right. More from the Culture File, from the Reuters Wire. A German restaurant operator has run into trouble with local tax authorities because he makes larger than average schnitzels for his customers. Now, a schnitzel is a veal cutlet. Now, the shop owner, he says he sells about 70 schnitzels a day, but the government tax officials insist that he sells 200 schnitzels a day based on the amount of raw material he purchases. He says, no, I just make big schnitzels. But they say, oh, no, you're trying to get around the schnitzel tax. Now, this fellow is protesting the demand from the tax authorities to pay more tax based on the higher volume of food that he buys. They're saying that he's trying to somehow get around this tax on schnitzels there in Germany. Well, he's become something of a celebrity, a tax protester over there in Germany. A spokesman for the tax office was contacted by Reuters, and he said that he was not able to discuss the matter, nor was he able to discuss much of anything outside the arcane and esoteric minutiae of the German tax code, which was likely why he had never found a wife, and that he was neither interesting or charming or engaging, and that he wished he could have become a movie star or a footballer. But he has recognized his acute inadequacies, and he recognized them early on, and says he was lucky to acquire a job as a low-level government functionary, and if he hadn't secured this job with the tax office, he'd likely be eating out of the trash cans alongside his several cats. That's the tax official there in Germany. Pretty sad story. So that entire biography, I just made it up. That's my vision of a low-level functionary at the tax office, whether in Berlin or Boston or Binghamton or St. Louis or Poplar Bluff or Kansas City or Denver or Indianapolis. On the one hand, it's kind of funny, but on the other, it's really kind of sad. Let's go to Frenchtown, Montana. From the Associated Press, police say a Montana woman fended off a bear attack with a zucchini last week. Missoula County Sheriff says a 200-pound black bear attacked a woman's dog just after midnight last Wednesday. When the woman tried to separate the animals, the bear bit her on the leg. So the woman reached for the nearest object at hand on the porch's railing, a large zucchini she had harvested from her garden. The woman flung the vegetable at the bear, striking the bear and forcing it to run away. Now, that's a pretty accurate shot with a zucchini. That's pretty good. Now, wildlife officials are currently trying to locate the bear. At last report, they were still trying to find the bear. The woman did not need serious medical attention, and the zucchini was bruised and will likely not recover. All right, that's it. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, folks. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. That's KGOV.com. Check it out. I want to thank all the good people at Personhood USA. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, Lord willing. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.